For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back!
That's a crossover. Right here on 960theref.com.
What's going on, guys? Sam Franco, Chris Brame back with another episode of the crossover right here on 960theref.com. Episode 13, plenty to get to today. As SEC Media Days have come and gone, we're going to turn our attention to the actual action on the field, where Logan and I did an exercise a few weeks ago on the morning show, so I wanted to bring that here, where we will name the best player on each team in the SEC. And, Brame, some teams that is easier said than done.
Yeah, because there's good teams in the SEC, and then there's, I don't know, maybe there's a couple of bad teams in it, but it seems like there's just now kind of a much larger middle class in the league than there's been, and unfortunately in the East, when you look at it, like, I don't know that programs like Kentucky and Vanderbilt have necessarily elevated themselves as much as, you know, Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee have started to stoop, unfortunately, closer to their levels. So yeah, it is still easier for some than others.
Right, and for example, a team like Alabama, and that's where we can start. I figure we'd go west and then head east and probably finish with Georgia. But a team like Alabama has so many good football players, it's really hard to pin that one down. For me, it comes down to one guy on offense and one guy on defense. I'd probably go Bo Scarborough on offense, and this list will feature very little offensive linemen because it's kind of hard to gauge that. I mean, you know, maybe some teams it's easier to kind of find that offensive lineman that really jumps out at you. I'm thinking about Arkansas, example, with Frank Ragnow, their center, who is widely regarded as one of the best offensive linemen in the country. So that might be an offensive line one. But for me, for Alabama, it's a choice between Bo Scarborough and Minkah Fitzpatrick. And that is obviously not an easy decision, but I think the dynamic play of Fitzpatrick, that forcing turnovers, and not only that, but the way that Alabama, better than any team in the country, after a turnover, everybody on the defense automatically flips the script to become an offensive lineman, and having a guy like Minkah Fitzpatrick that can play that center fielder ball hawk type position and know that the teammates around him, if he does force an interception, are going to immediately turn and try and block for him to score a touchdown. That's where I think Alabama has the biggest game-changing ability. We saw that streak last season where they had what would end up being like 11 games in a row or something where they had a defensive score or a special team score.
I think it carried over from the previous season,
right,
too. Yeah,
right.
It was ridiculous.
So that's why, for me, Alabama, I go with Minkah Fitzpatrick because of the ability he has to flip a game. I know Bo Scarborough obviously is going to score a lot and gain a lot on the ground, but in those moments where a game needs to be flipped and momentum needs to be kind of flipped, I feel like Minkah Fitzpatrick can definitely provide that.
Now, if I cheat here on this and just take the easy way out and say, well, right now mock drafts project that Calvin Ridley will be the highest drafted Alabama player and maybe the first player taken from the conference this year, you know, depending on what Arden Key's able to come back and do. I know Key is a pass rusher, has definitely got a shot to be a pretty high draft pick. He'd be up there, too, from LSU. But I'm going to say Calvin Ridley. And when, you know, it's fascinating when you think about Alabama and how many players they've put into the NFL since Saban has been there. I mean, there's a couple of guys that he's put in there defensively that have flat-out turned out to be busts you never would have imagined would have been. His two best prospects right now in the NFL, well, the number one is Julio Jones.
Yes.
And number two is arguably Amari Cooper, receiver for the Raiders now. So it's two wide receivers. It might be the most successful pros that he's turned out. And fortunately, Dante Hightower made a couple of big plays in the Super Bowl. But, I'm going to cheat and just say Calvin Ridley based on mock draft projections, but I think it is – it's. I mean, Scarborough definitely – we saw his value in the national title game when he got hurt. They couldn't convert a third down. And, you know, yeah, Fitzpatrick definitely figures to be probably a top 10 pick next April too.
Yeah, and I think with Alabama too, you kind of alluded to it there with their NFL prospects, I guess. Would you say, not just on offense or defense, but combining both, there have probably been, in the Saban era, more busts than successes?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of the offensive linemen have been okay. A couple of those, like D. Milner pops to mind. I don't even know if Milner's in the league still. And he was he like the 9th or 10th pick in the draft of the Jets?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he's already out of the league. And, you know, even a couple of other guys, like HaHa Clinton Dix has done – he's been all right for Green Bay. He's
Trent
still
Richardson,
there.
Though, bust.
Trent Richardson, a bust. I mean, Mark Ingram has been average. He's still with the Saints. He's been okay.
Eddie Lacy's been kind of average, too.
Yeah. Who's – Marcel Darius, not great because he's bounced around some. So, yeah, I mean, there have probably been – when you start to just –
Well, Mount Cody. I mean, he hadn't really done a whole lot.
I mean, when you think about their – what those guys did in college and how they've, you know, they haven't been surefire things in the NFL where, I mean, clearly the best is Julio Jones. I mean, that's not even debatable.
No, it's not. I mean, he's one of the top, you know, five players in the league, not just at his position, but overall. So, I mean, he definitely has been the cream of the crop in terms of Alabama guys going to the NFL under Nick Saban. We'll jump to Auburn now. Best player on Auburn. And, you know, Auburn has a lot of hype going into this season, and a lot of their players get hyped up. But for me, I think this was pretty easy because we saw what happened when this team played Georgia without this guy last season. I'm going Cam Pettway. I think at running back, I think Cam Pettway is a guy who has a chance to be a Heisman candidate himself. You know, Jared Stidham's the guy getting all the love right now for Auburn. But I definitely like Cameron Pettway at running back, and I think he's a guy that can have a really, really good season. So I'm going with him as best player on Auburn.
Sam, they've got a player on their defense that's been a part of maybe the biggest play in Auburn's school history, Trey Matthews. How could you not go? Oh, that's right. He didn't play
he
for
was on
Auburn.
The other side.
That's right. He didn't play for Auburn at that time. Yeah, I think Pettway is – I mean, I definitely wouldn't go with Stidham with as much hype as he's getting in the offseason, but – yeah, Pettway really had started to get going last year before he got hurt in that Vanderbilt game the weekend they came here and played us. I'll throw you one out there. Is he the best player? No, but he might be the most important player because in a sport where they're so erratic, I mean, that's where the idea of college kickers comes in. I would throw a vote for Daniel Carlson. Having that stability at kicker where you can trust, you're going to send that guy out there and he's going to make it for you. You can count on him from, you know, 50-plus yards, and he basically won the LSU game for him last year. That's all they kicked was, what, 6 field goals?
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the Tigers, we'll jump to LSU now. And this one, very similarly to Alabama for me, comes down to one player on offense, one player on defense. It's Darius Geis on offense, and it is Arden Key on defense. I'm going to go with Arden Key. Although Geis is a very, very good player and showed that LSU didn't miss a beat too much when Leonard Fournette did not play. I mean, Geis rushed for 1,387 net yards with 15 touchdowns, had a better overall season than Fournette. Granted, Fournette didn't play in as many games. But I still think that Arden Key has a chance to be one of the best defenders, if not the best defensive player in all of college football. 12 sacks last season, 56 tackles, and 11 quarterback hurry. So I think he's got a chance to be a very, very dominant player and a player that's drafted inside of the top five.
And important, too, for a defense that had a bunch of guys drafted in April. They've only got about 40% of their production from last year returning. So having, you know, arguably the best defensive player in the conference back there makes him even more key for them. Now, I mean, the question, though, is coming out of media days is it sounds like he's not going to be ready for fall camp. He had shoulder surgery, and Coach O, I believe I deciphered that he said he wasn't even sure whether or not he'd be ready for their opening game against BYU. And, I mean, BYU's a threat to beat LSU.
Yeah, they are. There's no question about that. That's going to be a tough game for them.
Yeah, I mean, without potentially its best defensive player, LSU could be vulnerable there.
All right, we'll jump to Texas A&M now, a team that definitely has a coach on the hot seat there in Kevin Sumlin. It's funny, I feel like their game against UCLA on Sunday, the day before Labor Day, their first game of the year, I feel like that game is the hot seat bowl because both of those coaches are definitely feeling the pressure that is flying around them. In terms of the best player on Texas A&M, I feel like because, you know, they lost the number one pick in the NFL draft on a defense that wasn't actually that good anyway. So I can't really go the defensive side of the ball. I think this comes down to either Travion Williams, running back, or Christian Kirk, wide receiver. And I'd probably go with Kirk just because he had a really good season last year. He wasn't their number one receiver. That fell to Josh Reynolds. But Kirk had 9 touchdowns and 928 yards receiving. So I'd probably go with him, although Travion Williams did rush for over 1,000 yards with 8 touchdowns. I just don't necessarily see a whole lot of talent on this team, unfortunately, just because it's a team that has underperformed ever since Johnny Manziel left.
Yeah, well, Kirk is going to be a high draft pick, too. The question for A&M this year is who's going to throw him the ball. And they've got basically a three-man quarterback derby that's going to unfold over the next month leading into opening day. And then, I mean, who knows if they're not even still in a position when they do open up at UCLA that they're maybe playing a couple of those guys. But, yeah, I mean, I think Kirk is their best player. They do have that one. I guess he's a sophomore now. He was a 5-star defensive lineman who played last year as a freshman. Might be able to make up some of the ground lost with Miles Garrett.
Yeah, I'm looking at the field still here. I see a lot of their guys are either juniors or seniors on the defensive line. But they definitely will have a defensive line that should be pretty good. They've done a good job in recruiting on that line. I mean, according to Phil Steele, it'll be Jarrett Johnson, Zaycoven Henderson, Daylon Mack.
That's it.
And Michael Clemens.
Yeah, Daylon Mack.
Okay. So Mack has a chance to be a pretty good player. And last season, he racked up some good statistics. He had 1.5 sacks, 25 tackles, 1 tackle for loss. So a lot will be relied upon with him for helping that defense out and helping not miss Miles Garrett as much. But, yeah, Christian Kirk seems like the answer here.
Yeah,
to go
I think that's the easy one.
All right, we'll jump to Arkansas now, where we alluded to this earlier, but when you have one of the best offensive linemen in the country and a guy that Brett Bielema said not only is one of the best centers he's ever coached, but the best offensive lineman he's ever coached, I got to go with Frank Ragnow here. And, again, it's kind of tough for the naked eye to judge what the offensive line does. But on a team that went 7-6 last year, Austin Allen, I think, is a good answer. I think he's going to be one of the better quarterbacks in the conference. He threw for 3,430 yards last season with 25 touchdowns and 15 picks. Needs to clean up the picks a little bit. But I'd still go Ragnow.
Yeah, I think Ragnow's the choice. And, we know firsthand, even though they're he's an offensive lineman, and it's that position where you don't really notice him unless they commit a penalty or anything like that. But we can just go back to that Florida game, I guess, 2013, are we talking now, when David Andrews got hurt and missed a couple of series, and Georgia couldn't move the ball once he went out of the game. And that was, we had Todd Gurley still.
Yeah.
But once when Andrews wasn't there, and we know how good he's been already in the pros, didn't take him long to become Tom Brady's preferred choice at center.
Well, and look at what the Falcons did once they were able to get Alex Mack and shore up that part of the offensive line. They had one of the better lines in the league last year.
Yeah. I mean, he and center 2 years ago was the Falcons' probably the worst position on the team.
It was the worst position maybe in the NFL.
They couldn't snap the ball. Matt Ryan kept getting a ton of pressure up the middle. So, yeah, I argued last year that while Matt Ryan was going to win the NFL's MVP, and I think rightfully so, you could have made a case that Alex Mack was the Falcons' most valuable player just in the difference he made from 1 year to the next snapping the ball. So, the answer with Arkansas is Ragnow or Allen.
Yeah.
For sure. I am interested to see now that Raleigh Williams retired, though, with the injury back in the spring, that Devil Whaley is going to be their number one running back now. He's a former Georgia commitment, but it ain't anybody on defense at Arkansas because their defense is horrendous and has been for since Bielema's been there.
All right, we'll jump to a team that is ineligible for the postseason this year. I'm talking about the Ole Miss Rebels.
Well, they must have good players, though, because they didn't get ineligible by cheating to get bad ones.
No, they did not. And, this team, they lost a lot on both sides of the ball. They lost 6 starters on offense and 5 on defense. you know, Shea Patterson showed me a lot last season when he had to come in for Chad Kelly. I'm tempted to go with him, although they do have a good receiver there in Van Jefferson, some pretty good players on the D-line, including Benito Jones.
Jefferson's another former Georgia commitment, too.
That's right. So I'm not as confident in this one as I have been on some of the other ones, but I'll probably say Shea Patterson just because I really liked what I saw from him when he was when he became basically the starting quarterback there for them.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're still kind of projecting, but between Patterson and Greg Little, who were the two big signees that they had for 2016, and then Little as a freshman was in there starting, I think, pretty much every game at left tackle to replace Laramie Tunsil.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it'll end up being one of those two. I know they'd like to have some heat back on defense because that Landshark D definitely took a step back last season. But Patterson was a big time recruit and did finally dip his toes into the water last year and had some good moments. So I'd probably lean toward Patterson, but I mean, Little's definitely in play there too.
And we'll finish up the West with Mississippi State, and this one's pretty easy. Nick Fitzgerald, a guy that has definitely done some good things in his time at Mississippi State. UT Chattanooga.
That was all who wanted him.
As Dan Mullen said after they beat Ole Miss in the Egg Bowl. Fitzgerald threw for 2,423 yards with 21 touchdowns and 10 picks. He also ran for 1,375 net yards with 16 touchdowns. That guy scares the crap out of me for that September 23rd game in Athens between Georgia and Mississippi State. I know this team overall doesn't have a whole lot of talent. They do return 7 starters on offense and 6 on defense. Chauncey Rivers, former Georgia Bulldog, now will be lining it up for the Bizarros. But, yeah, in terms of best player, it's pretty easy, and it's Nick Fitzgerald.
Yeah, he finished 3rd in the SEC last year in rushing. You mentioned his stats there. He had a ridiculous number of – I mean, not a ridiculous number, but I did think he led the conference in big plays of like 70-plus yards. So he's got that home run hitting potential. I think he had a 90-yard touchdown run last season too. But, I'd say the one thing that makes me feel a little bit better about that game – is the fact that they play LSU the week before they come here, and we play Samford, but that helps rest my mind a little bit. But yeah, that is one of the scarier matchups on the schedule this year. I mean, arguably the best coach and quarterback Georgia's going to face this year are at Mississippi State.
Yeah,
with Dan Mullen and Nick Fitzgerald. So I mean, you got two things. Well, there's three things. One, the game is at home. Not that Georgia's been invulnerable at home. But two, the schedule. We play Samford, they play LSU, that helps. And three, I guess when you're breaking down the conference slate, it is the least important one on there. If Georgia was to lose a game in the league this year, the Mississippi State game is the one I think we'd all pick. So,
all right, we'll jump to the East now. We'll start with the Florida Gators, where this one's tough because this season is very big for Jim McElwain. He's been winning based on the defensive prowess of this team, getting to the SEC title game the last 2 years. And those players were Will Muschamp recruits. Those guys are gone. And I don't know how well Jim McElwain's done in restocking the cupboard there on defense. And offensively, he hasn't gotten this team where they should be, and he was brought in to fix the offense. So I'm not exactly sure on Florida. I'm not as high on Florida as a lot of people are. I think they take some steps back this season. But I'd probably go Antonio Callaway. I mean, Callaway's a guy who is a dynamic punt returner, and he also had some very good statistics as a wide receiver, 721 receiving yards with 3 touchdowns. So I'd probably go Antonio Callaway.
Well, when we start thinking of like Florida and then sizing them up with Georgia, and just take the defenses as a whole, Florida's defense should definitely take a step back. Now, I think it's still going to be good. I mean, their secondary is elite once again, and the Gators just keep churning out great defensive backs year after year after year now. But I'd like to think that Georgia, with the experience that the Dogs have coming back, that Georgia's defense will be better this season. But then when you start going, all right, position group by position group offensively, the two places to me that Florida is definitely ahead is the offensive line and wide receiver, and Antonio Callaway is a big reason for that. And then the other guy, my guy, is going to be Martez Ivey, their stud left tackle. He's a former 5-star. He's basically been starting as a true freshman, And that's, you know, that's the one area when you start thinking about the differences between Georgia and Florida, where potentially the Gators for this upcoming season have a pretty big, big advantage is on the offensive line.
All right, we will jump now to Tennessee, where this one's hard because they lost a lot. You know, they lost their quarterback in Josh Dobbs. They lost running backs. Jalen Hurd just decided to leave, and Alvin Kamara is in the NFL now. So this one's tough for me. I think that I would probably go with Juwan Jennings at receiver. Last season, caught 40 balls for 7 touchdowns, and we all remember he was the guy who caught the long bomb there from Josh Dobbs to beat Georgia. We don't have to rehash that or anything other than mentioning it there. But I'd probably go with him just because he's the guy that burns brightest in my mind.
Well, yeah, like you said, they're replacing Dobbs, their quarterback. Dobbs included in this. They're replacing 3 of their top rushers with Hurd, who was left the team during last season, but also now Alvin Kamara's gone. Josh Malone, their top receiver's gone. They're losing Derek Barnett. But I like defensively for them that Darren Kirkland.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's a good linebacker.
Yeah. So I'd probably lean Kirkland, but there's basically Tennessee's one where you're doing a lot of guessing because there was a lot of turnover from last year's team for sure.
All right.
But they like their quarterbacks.
They do.
Yeah. Coming out of spring, both of them.
All right. We'll head on to South Carolina now, where this one, obviously a team that Will Muschamp is trying to make over. Deebo Samuel at wide receiver, very good player. Jake Bentley, when they decided to pull the red shirt off of him last season, came on very, very strong.
Yeah, and I mean, Bentley, again, I think everyone knows, was basically should have been a senior in high school last season when South Carolina decided to play him. And, the thing with Bentley, too, when you think about last season, is South Carolina's offensive line, they were terrible protecting quarterbacks. He faced a ton of pressure. I mean, it felt like pretty much every snap Bentley was under pressure, so to have done what he did at the age that he was and the experience level that he was faced with that pressure was definitely impressive. But when I'm thinking of when I think of that game this fall for Georgia and going back to even last year's game that the Dogs did win in Columbia, the guy that scares the daylights out of me is their tight end Hayden Hurst,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, he's one of those former minor league baseball players. So he's an older kid. He's enormous. I was hoping he would go ahead and turn pro this year, but he didn't. But I would say they're tight end Hurst.
Yeah, he had a good season last year, catching 48 balls for 616 yards with a touchdown. They didn't have too many passing touchdowns there. But since you went with Hurst, I'll probably go with Jake Bentley. Although, watch out for Sky Moore. He's a very good
player. He's back.
Player.
Yeah, he missed all of last season for them defensively.
As a linebacker, they're a very good player as well. Jumping to Kentucky, where I feel like this one is one of two guys. You know, they did lose Boom Williams, and that'll hurt them. But Benny Snell is a very, very, very capable replacement. And Steven Johnson, their quarterback, also a very good player. I tell you what, though, Kentucky's got some players on defense, which is something they haven't had in recent years or in their times of struggle. And Mark Stoops has done a very good job in that regard. I'm still going to go with Benny Snell here because I think he provides them with the most punch on offense. But, you know, there are a good number of defensive players that are very good on this team.
Yeah, including they have Kurt Cobain's widow on there, Courtney Love.
That's right.
No one asked him last week why he murdered Kurt Cobain. I was disappointed at SEC Con. But, yeah, I mean, Snell was – I feel like his breakout game last year was against us, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, he had a really good game against Georgia. He's a true freshman. So, yeah, I think Snell is – that's the guy to go with for Kentucky, too.
All right, jumping to Missouri. This one feels kind of easy, although I will say that with Missouri, they just keep churning out defensive linemen year after year after year. Well, you expect them to drop off in that category, and they haven't yet. But I'm going back to the offensive side of the ball. Jamon Moore, very good at receiver. Demaria Crockett, very good at tailback. But Drew Locke's the guy that makes this team go.
Yeah, and I know he got better last season. They were in their first-year head coach the first-year head coach, yeah, and Barry Odom. But also they had the new offensive coordinator in Josh Heupel, and Missouri's offense still was pretty productive last season, up-tempo, running a lot of plays, and you figure under a second year coordinator, and now Drew Locke is a junior?
Drew Locke is a junior.
Yeah, so he's, you know, they figure to be better. But that Jamon Moore is, that's another one, guys, I've already, you start looking ahead on Georgia's schedule to each individual game and start picking out individual players on each team that scare you. Moore is the guy for Missouri that kind of bugs me because he's a big receiver too. I mean, Georgia does not have a big secondary. I'm telling you, that Notre Dame game in week number two, they've got big receivers, 6'4", 6'4", and 6'5". Those are tough matchups in that second game of the season. So I'd lean toward Jamon Moore.
All right, we'll jump to Vandy before wrapping up with Georgia. And Vandy seems pretty easy. I mean, you know, Zach Cunningham, losing him on defense, obviously going to hurt that team a lot. That's 125 tackles out the door, 16.5 of those for loss. But, you know, with him gone, I think the easy answer here is Ralph Webb. He ran for 1,283 net yards last season with 13 touchdowns.
Yeah, I think Webb is the simple one there. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how much better Kyle Shurmur is, though, because they had a couple of nice offensive performances in November before they laid that egg in the bowl game.
Well, I mean, Ole Miss and Tennessee, I mean, two teams that they really took behind the woodshed.
And that is, I mean, it's kind of freaky, but, I mean, you start thinking about Vanderbilt with Derek Mason and the job he's done with that defense since he took over and basically decided to become its defensive coordinator, too, that if they have an offense, then the SEC East might be thankful that they have to play Alabama this year. Otherwise, I mean, the Commies might be more of a threat in the division.
That's a good point.
But I don't know. I have a hard time every time I look at their schedule and I see, I don't know, but man, they play Alabama. That's not good.
And last but not least, the Georgia Bulldogs. And this one, I mean, there's a couple of worthy candidates here. Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, both have a case on offense. They do different things so well. But I know that he's been out, but he's coming back. He had a heck of a season, especially the end of the season in that TCU game. I mean, Georgia doesn't win that game without the play of Trenton Thompson. And maybe that's because that's what's freshest on my mind. And look, this is not a knock on Nick Chubb, not a knock on Sony Michel, not a knock on Isaac Nauta, but I'm going Trenton Thompson because I feel like he has the ability to impact the game for Georgia about as much as anybody, if not the most, on this team.
Well, and if you know, again, we can get back, and if you want to cheat and just answer based on,
like, draft prospect.
Yeah. I mean, Thompson is going to be higher than the two running backs, but I don't think there's any doubt the Trenton Thompson, Chubb, and Michelle, those three have to have great seasons if Georgia's going to have a great year. And if they don't, then, I mean, Georgia's going to have a hard time being very good this season. I mean, your best players, your star players, they've got to play that way. And so those are three of the key ones. I mean, Roquan Smith is certainly another one. And I know Isaac Nauta was voted the preseason first team All-SEC tight end last week at SEC Con, but his success is going to be tied to Jacob Eason, whose success is also going to be somewhat tied to the offensive line. So as good as Nauta can be, you know, he's still got to have some help from some other places to have a big year.
I think some dark horse candidates for Georgia would be Dominic Sanders. I think that Lorenzo Carter could have a really good season as well and have that season that a lot of Georgia fans expected him to have by this point now that he's a senior. And if he does, that's obviously going to help on the defensive side of the ball. But, again, I just think Trenton Thompson, you hit the nail on the head. Georgia's not going to have a good season if Trenton Thompson, Sony Michel, and Nick Chubb don't have good seasons.
Yeah, and, you know, Thompson and defensive line, that's another one of those spots where you look at, well, how many tackles for loss, how many sacks did the guy have, but one thing that's not necessarily one of those more easily accessible statistics about a guy would be, like, stuffing the run, how many runs are stopped at the line of scrimmage, how many behind the line of scrimmage, and he's one of the best run stoppers in the country. And when you start thinking about the running backs George is going to face, and then some of those running quarterbacks too, that's another reason why Thompson's got to be ready to go and come in and have a big season.
All right, so with all this, we've done this part of it. Now, who's the best player in the conference? That one, very, very hard to do. But just off the top of my head right here, I went with Minkah Fitzpatrick for Alabama, and if Alabama's the best team in the SEC, I think I'm going Minkah Fitzpatrick for the entire conference.
If we were, you know, projecting, like, who's going to be the SEC player of the year, I would probably lean either like Key or Geist to me at LSU. One of those two guys.
It's kind of harder to stand out on Alabama just because there's so many good players.
Yeah, but I mean, crazy, the thing with Alabama too, it's like, well, Jalen Hurts is the reigning SEC Offensive Player of the Year, but Saban said that, well, Tua Tagovailoa's coming in there to play some too,
which is crazy. Like they have one of the best quarterbacks in the conference, and then they're going to also bring in this other guy who does a lot of similar things. You know, it's kind of strange.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be fascinating to see how they work him in, but I would imagine Hurts will still have a pretty good year too.
All right, that'll wrap things up for this edition of the Crossover here on 960theref.com. I am being told that it is very, very soon that we will be on iTunes, so you'll be able to subscribe to us there, and you'll also be able to leave us one of those 5-star reviews, which why wouldn't you? Because this is a 5-star program. And
how many can we leave ourselves?
About 5, I would assume.
Okay,
So we can do that.
I'm just going to go on there and just 5-star us.
Yeah, we'll sneak in there and blow up our own stats a little bit. But for Chris Brame, I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening. You can catch us every week right here on 960theref.com with the Crossover Podcast.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.